Hey, would you like us to read a story of your choosing? Well, you're in luck. Head on over to superhumanregistrationpodcast.com and fill out the web form at the Contact Us link. If you submit a story there that is available to read on Marvel Unlimited, we will consider it for a future episode of the show. The world's not as simple as it used to be. It's not enough to be a good guy anymore. We have to be the best. The time has come. All will be accounted for. Or we will hunt them. Stand up. It's time to be the heroes we were always meant to be.
So I was gonna... So, Stevie, you reminded me of something. I know it's not kosher anymore to say, like, that I like Louis C.K. skits. But there's a Louis C.K. stand-up bit where he talks about when he got when he was divorced, and he talks about how terrible dating is for him as like a middle-aged man. And he's like, I just don't find like young girls sexy anymore. The thing I find attractive is like the wrinkles on her face from stressing out about kids, or the stretch marks from giving children too many from having too many children and not enough love from her man. Just that quiet desperation of giving up but still looking forward to the future. That's what I find attractive.
Oh, jeez. That line is awful.
Well, I'm also butchering the quote here, but I'm not also not going to sully my search history with Louis C.K. divorce.
It really sucks because he was changing comedy and you know... was really funny, but I mean, like, offensive, sure, but like, yeah, it just sucks that
I kind of hate that. And nowadays, I mean, I don't hate it, I totally understand. But it's I am a little disappointed I now have to like low key like Louis C.K.
because it's so hard to separate, you know, private life, you know, public, like, you, I can't watch, like, one of the greatest stand up specials of all time is Bill Cosby himself. And you look at, like, you look at, you know, comedians, and they say, well, who are your influences? And they'd always say Bill Cosby. And that now it's like, nope, dead to me. We need a new actor just to act out all of Bill Cosby himself so we can still laugh at the jokes, but separate it from, you know, this awful person.
Yeah.
Oh, man. The whole Bill Cosby thing, like, that really sucks. Like, when I was a kid, we grew up listening to Bill Cosby. My dad had these old records with all of Bill Cosby's stand-up.
Yeah, man.
And he recorded those over to cassette tape. So, like, at night, my brother and I would lie in bed and we would listen to these really awful recordings of all of Bill Cosby's stand-up. And, you know, we loved it. And that was my childhood. And so, you know, when all the news broke about Bill Cosby, it really hurt. It sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, you feel like you've been lied to and betrayed for, you know, forever.
I mean, he did have a routine about Spanish Fly.
I don't know that one.
So he was kind of telling us who he is the whole time. Hey, you know what's less depressing to talk about? Comics.
Hey, good news.
Are you guys ready for me to giggle at Scuttlebutt for 5 minutes? Scuttlebutt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Superhuman Registration Podcast, a show where we read, rank, and review the stories that are available to read on Marvel Unlimited. My name is Steven, and joining me, as always, are Aldo and John. How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Fantastically well. I'm kidding. I'm stressed out as crap.
Oh, Aldo, you're moving, right?
Yeah, this is the little move in preparation for the big move.
Oh, you're doing a move? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm moving back into my parents to save some money for the big move to Portland in August.
That's stress right there.
Yeah, so I'm going to be living out of boxes for like 3 months.
Oy.
Anyways, that's that.
Well, good luck with all the moving, Aldo. Anyway, why don't we go ahead and get started? Who wants to go first?
I was going to say I want to go first, mostly because I want to get the scuttlebutt giggles out. Scuttlebutt.
It's never gonna not be funny.
It's not.
You guys know scuttlebutt's a real word,
right? Yeah, I imagine, like, it is. That doesn't make it less hilarious.
And when it's said by a genetically engineered horse-faced guy about his spaceship that he talks to, or they just like, oh, my name is Scuttlebutt. I'm going to be addressing Lady Sif, who's a part goddess. This is a normal thing. No, there's not. There's got to be like a dude on a couch that just floats by in space, being like, hey, you know this whole conversation's ridiculous, right? Okay, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna go now. Bye. And then he just floats away. There's just no context where like Sif is like standing astride the, come, mighty Scuttlebutt, let us do battle. It's just
good gracious.
Cool. So this Thor story starts out with Donald Blake, the man that is Thor when he's not being Thor, just kind of hanging out around campus, and he's picked up by Nick Fury. As Nick Fury reveals that he knows that Donald Blake is Thor, tells him that they need the man with a hammer because there's a spaceship that's, I believe, like on a collision course, or at least headed straight to Earth, or on near Earth. At the bare minimum, to me, it wasn't super clear. Also, this was like a month ago.
Someone's ahead of the game.
No.
Jeez.
I took notes, and I also have a wiki, so... tools of the trade. Anyways, so he calls on to Thor to go help him out with this. So Thor intercepts this ship that's on the way, and in this ship, Beta Ray Bill... like a horseman in armor and like mechanical or biomechanical armor, it looks like, wakes up and battles Thor. Thor separated from his hammer for a bit and turns back into Donald Blake. And Beta Ray Bill is then able to lift up this hammer. And he turns into Beta Ray Thor, as he's called by Odin. After they finish their fight and they crash land on Earth, Odin appears on Earth as a big old storm vision to summon Thor. Back to Asgard and takes Beta Ray Bill with him instead. Beta Ray Bill gets transported to Asgard and starts just fighting with everybody because he's scared and calling everybody demons. And eventually he's calmed to calm down. Odin talks to him, you know, sees that he's taken the hammer from him, something they never thought anybody else would do. Boy, if only they knew the next 30 years of Marvel history. And after a couple conversations, you know, they find out that Beta Ray Bill is a warrior from a different planet, and he's been engineered to be the best warrior of that race. And I forgot what they're called.
Does it ever say?
It doesn't say in the book, but they do have like a name of what they are. But
the Williams.
No, they're Corbinites.
Oh sure,
Corbinites.
Corbinites. That was close. Yeah, so they're Corbinites, and he took on this challenge to become the best warrior, bested, you know, hundreds of other warriors to become, to kind of gain the opportunity to be, you know, engineered to be the super creature who is now kind of rejected by his people because he's so gruesome. He sacrifices his humanity in order to be this ultimate warrior. To be able to defend
his Corbinitanity.
Corvanity.
Yeah, but they say his humanity.
They say a lot of things.
Yeah, they do say a lot of things. Anyway, so they fight, and Odin tells them, listen, boys, we only have one hammer, and we can't split this hammer in half. So
this is Odin, not Solomon. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. So he puts them to fight, you know, this kind of hellish earth where gods can die. And Beta Ray Bill wins. So the two warriors are going to go back to Asgard and they recover for a couple days. And in the meantime, Odin has kind of asked the dwarves to craft another hammer for Beta Ray Bill. And this is accomplished by Odin going out, asking them to do this. And they're like, hey, will you send us your best female warrior? And he's like, okay. So he sends Sif, the beast, the best female warrior before Angela, on Asgard, to go beat up this dude. And you find out that's exactly what they wanted. He's a bully. And now they're all super happy that the bully has had his butt kicked and has left the dwarves. So now they can forge hammers in peace, I guess. Which that was a lot more trivial than I expected. And it was kind of cute and charming.
It actually kind of was.
Yeah, no, it really was. Like, you kind of think it's like this noble thing where they just want to have they just want to procreate with like their best warrior. No, they just want to kick out Jeff the Bully. That's not his actual name.
But I expected that sequence. It's been a long time since I've read this, and I expected that sequence to be a little cringy. And I mean, it was a little cringy, but at the end of the day, it's like a nice subversion. I quite liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after Beta Ray Bill gets his hammer, which I don't, do they call it Stormbreaker in here?
They do call it Stormbreaker. Okay.
They
yes.
do. Yeah.
Cool. Thor and Sif and Beta Ray Bill go to Beta Ray Bill's ship, the Scuttlebutt. I can't not giggle.
It's great every time.
Yeah, and so they're getting attacked by a bunch of like demons coming out of portal, and they find out that this portal is Beta Ray Bill's home world. It's been turned into a portal. So they go in there, and there's a fiery giant kind of crafting a sword, and while he's doing this crafting, demons are coming out of it, out of the portal, and that's what's been attacking, you know, Beta Ray Bill's world. It's kind of what they're ravaging throughout the galaxy, and coincidentally, it's hinted at throughout the book that it's also summoning other creatures and demons on Earth as well. And so Thor and Beta Ray Bill fight that dude, while Sif stays behind with the Scuttlebutt to save it and save all the people aboard the Scuttlebutt.
I just think that it's weird the different crossovers you get between Earth culture and alien culture. In the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy books, there was always a drink, no matter what planet you're on, there's always a drink called a gin and tonic. What the drink actually is does depend on the planet. Sometimes you do get similar ingredients, but here we have Scuttlebutt, a word in English, and also a perfectly reasonable name for a ship, apparently, in the Beta Ray Bill world.
So a scuttlebutt, according to Merriam-Webster...
Oh, English major, here we go.
...is a cask on a shipboard to contain fresh water for a day's use. It is also a word that can be used to mean rumor or gossip.
Thanks, nerd.
Okay, you're welcome. Now let's get back to our comic about Norse mythology and aliens.
Geek. And scuttlebutts. Yeah, so Beta Ray Bill, so they kind of blow this thing up. Beta Ray Bill goes back to Asgard with Thor and Sif to kind of, you know, revel in their victory and all this. And Odin gives them a special gift by removing the, like, essentially like the limiter on the hammer that Thor has, the Mjolnir, and passes it on to Beta Ray Bill, meaning that at any given time, Beta Ray Bill can slam the hammer or whatever, and he'll turn into a basic Corbinite. He'll regain his
Play-Doh true man.
Form. Yeah, who honestly just looks like a really swole, smiley man.
Yeah.
like that emoji, he looks like that, but just... Like, he works out 5 days out of the
What's
week.
Up, everybody? I got stung by a bee at the gym, and,
Gosh.
That's the voice I imagine, too.
Yeah. He's like, I am Beta Ray Bill. All right, but you can just call me Bill when I'm like this. What do you like to do, Bill? Oh, you know, I don't want to get in any fights or anything. And he taps his hammer. Oh, but I do!
So then Beta Ray Bill goes back to the to his people, the Corbinites.
I collect stamps.
Stop it.
And, you know, happily ever after.
It's an overlooked hobby. You know, people just use email nowadays, and that's a real shame.
So, Thor.
I'm just seeing how much I can get. Steven just, you can hear in the silence his pissed offness. Sorry. Talk about Volstagg.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I also didn't mention there's like three or four other like subplots going on like at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and something I want to point out, this whole like demon forging a sword thing, I don't think that's actually connected to the dire wraith, or to the, no, they're not dire wraiths, to these demons that Beta Ray Bill's fighting. Like, maybe it is, but I think that's more implied than overt.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you go to the fourth issue that we read here, which was number 340. Yeah. when we cut to that page where we see the giant forging the sword, we get a meanwhile, beyond the fields we know. So this is not the same place. This demon is, in fact, Surtur, who we saw at the beginning of Thor Ragnarok, right before they played Led Zeppelin. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting that they used him for kind of that little comedic bit. But yeah, in addition to that, we've got all the stuff with Baldur the Brave, where we're kind of getting that set up. There's some weird things going on with Loki and the Enchantress's sister, Lorelei. So there are a lot of little subplots woven throughout this whole thing. It's laying a lot of groundwork for the next 5 years or so. I don't remember how long Simonson was on for, but he was on it for a while.
This is definitely one of those books that's it does a really good job at kind of telling you the main story, but it also I don't want to say it's over encumbered, but like there is a lot of stuff going on here that if you're just reading this for just the Beta Ray Bill stuff, you're kind of left wondering, like, is this really necessary?
Yeah, is this gonna go anywhere?
I was kind of like, what's going on? I was like, this is probably going to be interesting if you keep reading. But as soon as Volstagg sat on that dude, I was like, whatever.
Oh, whatever. He stays there bring for like on the your remainder B-plots. Of three issues.
It's yeah, beautiful. He's still there. They keep cutting back, and the guy is just like has no dialogue except, you know. Yeah. It's wonderful. So I was like, yeah, I can. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I have gotten over this. The first time that I saw Thor Ragnarok, I was furious because they just killed off the Warriors 3. Yeah. I've gotten over it, and Thor Ragnarok is actually a pretty decent movie. But
third act problems notwithstanding.
Third act problems notwithstanding. Even those are less pronounced in Ragnarok than they are in other superhero movies, though.
Yeah. It does help to have like an enormous demon trashing in a whole city, and it's like, well, if this is as bad as it gets, I can deal with, like that's pretty
yeah. cool. But like The thing that made me mad is I love Volstagg in particular. The Warriors 3, I think, are pretty good characters, but Volstagg in particular is hilarious. I love Volstagg. He's always comic relief, but never to the point where he's actually inept, Which yeah. is yeah. really cool that he gets to be like a cool warrior who just happens to be a big guy that likes to eat and sit on people when they're getting rowdy. And yeah. So the fact that Thor Ragnarok killed off Volstagg in the first, 20 minutes made me mad. And yes, I said rowdy.
I like him. He's laid back. He's a little bit more chill. He's kind of like, just take it easy, bro.
Yeah, he's great. One other thing before we get too deep into the plot here. I want to point out that this story and, again, the next 3 or 4 years of Thor were written and drawn by Walt Simonson. The credits pages say that the colors were by George Rosas, or I don't know how to pronounce that. But on the app, we're not seeing those colors. We're seeing the colors from the Omnibus, which was published in 2011, I think, according to Amazon. And those colors are by Stephen Olief.
Huh.
What kind of changes were made? Was it just, cleaned up, or what?
I'm not exactly sure. I have looked up in the past the differences. And this is definitely a more modern coloring than what we would have gotten, because these books came out originally in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were like newsprint.
Well, yeah, I mean, they were on newsprint, basically. Yeah, if you do some image searches, it's pretty easy to see a comparison. They've definitely cleaned up, tightened up the colors.
It is nice that they've done that, because a lot of the times, I mean, I think there's some few exceptions, like that True Believers Spider-Man recoloring that was pretty not great.
Yeah.
But I think they overstepped their bounds on that one. But for these ones, because the way you color for newsprint as opposed to digital or modern paper is way different. And I know this isn't Marvel, but when DC did their newspaper comics experiment, or 12 issue run, when they printed that in the hardcover, which is like a glossier paper, they had to go in and change the colors, because they knew that going in that when you do colors for newspaper, it just does not work the same. So it's kind of nice to see, especially big iconic stories like this one, kind of get that treatment.
Yeah, I sometimes question it, because frequently in the paper, the floppy issues, when they're originally printed, they make some coloring choices that are not realistic, but they're really kind of like exaggerated emotionally. Things like characters being colored in all purple with the background being yellow. And frequently those get a more quote-unquote realistic recoloring when they're remastered for things like this. And a lot of people prefer the garish colors to the more realistic. This is really the only version of Thor that I know, or what, of Simonson Thor. I don't think I've read these books with the original coloring. And for me, what keeps me going through these books, even this first story arc where things are a little bit slow, is Simonson's pencils and inks. Well, I'm not sure he inks, but his pencils, his designs, his art is really good.
I see lettering, colors, editing, editor-in-chief, but art, it just says art and story, so it looks like he penciled and inked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was honestly surprised. I know this is like a comic from the 1980s, but the art here looks like a decade ahead of its time.
Yeah.
At minimum. It looks like the color work, not the color work, the line work, the inking, a lot of the expressions, even some of like the designs on the characters, they don't look like they're early 80s, because I think this was 83.
Well, like the page and panel layouts, like every one of these, the shots that he sets up, I'm looking at the first page of, since we were just in the fourth issue here, you know, the first page, like, I vaguely knew that, you know, Thor had, like, goats that hauled his carriage around, right? Oh, man. And you'd think that's, like, I'm like, that's the dumbest thing. And you look at him, it's like, oh, that, man, that would beat a DeLorean in a race, no problem. Like, it would be any cool vehicle from any movie.
So one of the things I kind of love-hate, I have a love-hate relationship with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because they
kind of... You love how much you don't hate it?
No.
John, I'd like to refer you to a guy named Patrick H. Willems.
Oh, yeah. So one of the things, I mean, I do love about the movies is, you know, you get to see Thor Ragnarok. Like, that's a thing that exists that I'm happy exists.
Yeah.
But also, I really don't like some of the clothing designs that they've done for, like Chris Pratt's, like Star-Lord. Like, I don't like, DI costume Indiana Jones in space. Like, I don't like that. So seeing kind of like some of these old designs, it's just super refreshing. And one of the things I love especially is Heimdall, who is huge apparently. Like, he looked gigantic. Like, his head was the entrance to the Bifrost.
Yeah.
And like, Sif is talking to him and she's like the size of his nose. Like, that's silly and awesome, and the movies don't do that.
No.
But Idris Elba, though, you know, if you can cast Idris Elba, then...
You win some, you lose some. But wouldn't you want 20-story tall Idris Elba?
They're afraid of that. They're afraid of... if they had a 20-story tall character, they'd make it a big purple cloud instead, because they're wusses about
something. I mean, they did give us a 20-story tall Peter Dinklage, so...
Yeah.
That's because they finally got weird. Yeah. They finally embraced it.
So going back to the, like, Simonson's arc here, there Simonson does a book called Ragnarok, which is him revisiting Thor, but he's not writing for Marvel. He's writing, like, it's IDW, I think. I'm not positive about that. But anyway, it's him revisiting Norse mythology after Ragnarok has happened. Thor comes back to life as a zombie and, like, roams the world trying to avenge the fallen gods and some other stuff like that. It looks like this book. And, this was published 30 years after his work on Marvel's Thor. Simonson's artwork stands the test of time. And, frankly, when you say he was ahead of his time, I think he was. Like, I think he genuinely think he was, because he's still drawing basically like this. And it looks great. Now, we did have a detour in the 90s when he was doing some stuff for DC where he looked very 90s. It was still pretty good, but it was also very 90s. But yeah, like, Simonson is really good at composition, at directing action. I don't... At designing, he's got some crazy machines going on in here that are very reminiscent of Kirby. Mm-hmm. But he also has this sort of, like, epic scope that really suits this sort of long-form storytelling. I really like Simonson.
And the other thing is, and I don't know, I don't think Simonson was at all involved with DC when they did the New Gods stuff, But like,
he kind of was.
Was he? Okay, that would make sense. Because like Beta Ray Bill's normal armor kind of looks like it's out of the New Gods stuff.
Well, the New Gods were created by Jack Kirby.
Right.
And Simonson is clearly drawing on Kirby here.
Mm-hmm.
And then Simonson did go to DC and do some New Gods stuff in the 90s. He did the Orion solo series.
That would make sense.
Yeah. And again, when you want somebody to do Kirby, but like with a modern sensibility, Simonson's the person you tap. He's very good at it. Oh, and one last thing. Walt Simonson's signature looks like a dinosaur.
Where,
Any of the covers. Like, I'm on the cover of 337. Right underneath the hammer.
Whoa!
Simonson designed his signature to look like a dinosaur.
That's cool. Really?
That doesn't look like a dinosaur to me.
No, the S makes a long tail, the O is the body, and then the S-O-N at the end, like, curves up, and it's the dinosaur's head.
It could also be a pregnant cobra.
Okay.
You know, honestly, it just looked like grass to me. Like a little field of grass, a little tuft of
with
grass.
With the sun?
Go to issue 340 and look at the cover. It looks more like a dinosaur there.
No, it still looks like grass.
Get out of here.
Okay, I'll be back in the next episode, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a wrap on Aldo.
You know, actually, talking about the cover to 340, that is like the one disappointment I have, is I feel it didn't deliver on the cover.
The pose is good, the layout is good, the actual artwork, the craftsmanship, it's a little sloppy.
Well, no, not even that. So what I'm saying is, when you look at the covers for the three previous books, they're all representative of something that happens in the book, right? So the first cover has Beta Ray Bill, hammer in hand, the Thor costume and everything.
And he smashes up the Thor logo.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not the Thor you knew, because Thor is now a space horse.
Yeah, and then you have them, you know, fighting for the hammer, like they do in the next issue.
With a new logo, by the way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you have Beta Ray Bill Stormbreaker, which happens in the comic. And then you have them, you know, fighting like all these demons, kind of looking like they're escaping out of hell, or like something's happening here. And you don't really get that in the book. You get them kind of going into this thing, fighting maybe a couple demons. But really what we see, or the bulk of what we see, is Sif doing that fighting. And she's not even on this cover. And I really would have loved to have seen, like, even another page, just one more page of these dudes, you know, blowing up the core and then, like, getting out of there like a bat out of hell, fighting all the demons on the way out.
Yeah.
And we don't really get that promise that's on the cover.
Yeah, this is the third time that I have read this Beta Ray Bill story. I can never remember how it ends.
Oh, really?
Because... yeah, like, I think this fourth issue is actually kind of weak.
Yeah.
The Simonson run on Thor, like, gets really, really good from here. But this first story arc, honestly, as much as I like Beta Ray Bill, and I really like Beta Ray Bill, and as much as I like Sif, and Sif gets a lot of good development in these four issues.
Is that
and Sif? As much as I like Thor, and I'm here for Volstagg sitting on people, this story doesn't quite do it for me. I don't know. It feels like it's mostly housekeeping.
Well, they have to introduce him.
Yeah. I think for me, the interesting stuff here isn't even the actual ending or the beginning of this. Like, the first issue and the last issue are kind of weak. I am in for just Thor and Beta Ray Bill fighting.
Yeah.
Like especially, like, that second issue. No, is it the second issue where they're fighting in essentially, like, hell? Like... I'm all about that. That's what I came in here for.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. But honestly, if issue number four, or not issue number four, the fourth issue, 340, could have delivered that, but with demons, I think it would have been my favorite. But it just kind of doesn't. Instead, you kind of get Sif fighting some demons and then talking to the scuttlebutt.
Instead of getting, like, a good demon fight or whatever, we get the coolest, like, high five or, like, glasses clink or whatever when they, like, bang their hammers together at the portal. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But,
yeah. Yeah. I was expecting kind of like the opening of Thor Ragnarok when he, you know, kills all the demons in hell with his hammer to the
Led Zeppelin. You know what would make me super giddy? Is if, like, the next Thor movie was just this.
If it just, like, introduced Beta Ray Bill?
Like, if it was, like, this storyline, like, Thor comes home, And like they Beta Ray Bill is like on a crash course to like Earth or Asgard, and he's just like, well, we just saved Earth, and then this story happens.
Yeah, like I would be okay with that. I think it would set up some interesting stuff. It would give us Beta Ray Bill, which would be wild.
I just want
Beta Ray Bill on the movie screen.
As long as Taika Waititi does it, I think it'd be done right, because that's such a, that used to be my, like, when Lego, like Marvel Lego came out, the video game, and I was like, they have all the characters? Yeah, all the characters are there. Like, really? All of them? Yeah. Do they have Beta Ray Bill? That was my go-to, like, obscure random character. But he keeps popping up, and they're like, I really enjoyed this story. I've never read anything with him in it before. I really enjoyed this. And if there are better Beta Ray Bill stories out there, Steven, I want to know about it, because I was just, like, it was really cool. And, like, very quickly was able to, like, suspend all disbelief of, like, this dude has a horse face. How can he, like, this is weird.
I really enjoy that Beta Ray Bill has, like, this this kind of romantic subplot with Sif.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and it's wonderfully done. It's wonderfully done, except that in 1980s, Sif's whole character was, I just want to be married to Thor.
Yeah.
With the exception of that little tidbit, I actually do appreciate the way they handled this kind of romance thing between the most beautiful and powerful lady warrior in Asgard and this horseman with a hammer.
Yeah. They do really, I think, a good job of showing that Sif is just like, this is her way of moving on. And there's, like, some hints at romance and stuff, but you also get the sense that really what she needs is she needs to get out of Asgard.
Yeah.
She needs an adventure. And she also needs a warrior by her side, because, you know, who else but a god is going to be able to keep up with this woman? She's pretty great. And yeah. So... like, I think they handle it pretty well if you, you know, give some allowances for it being, you know, mid-80s lady-focused storytelling, which is all about a man. So,
you know,
yeah.
The problem with Sif is once you go Thor, you stay sore.
Oh, that's no good, Aldo.
I struggled.
Really bad, Aldo.
I struggled. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Once you go Thor, you always want more.
Oh.
That's better.
Dang it.
That was much better.
Once you go Thor, you'll always be bored. No.
That implies that
it sound like you're bored with Thor.
And how could you? I mean, oh my.
I don't. So actually, that's kind of an interesting point, because I think in this first story arc with Simonson's Thor, Thor is the least interesting character.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot.
It is saying a lot, because he's not bad. I mean, there's some interesting stuff that happens. If nothing else, the last panel in issue 337, last page, where he's, like, screaming at the heavens for his father That panel is amazing. It was such good emotion in that.
Yeah.
It is. I also really like that he has this whole kind of breakdown in the middle, where he's like, I'm renouncing my godhood. I'm going to go adventure the stars and find my purpose.
Yeah.
It's like, stay in college. You're fine.
He's still kind of a child.
Yeah.
For a man who's like thousands of years old or whatever. Thor's kind of a baby in this. But in a good way. In an interesting way.
The other thing is actually kind of going back to that thing last panel you were talking about. I really like the first panel of the next book, where it's, instead of the close-up on him as Donald, it's kind of pulled out, and it's Thor in the lightning, and you can see the silhouette of his human form.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good follow-up, but, like, that's a really good way to, like, connect the two issues.
Yeah.
It's kind of beautifully done.
Yeah, no. Again, Simonson is not joking around.
He's not. This is good stuff. Honestly, every time I hear Walt Simonson, it sounds like an old-timey name. Like, it really does. So I'm always kind of thrown off when, like, I look at his art. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, this doesn't feel old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty unique, too, for all of the, like, the homages to Kirby. Like, I don't know that anybody else really draws like Simonson. I can't think of anybody that I can really compare him to.
The lettering reminded me a bit of the Silver Surfer book that we read. I don't know if the letter is the same.
Well, the Silver Surfer book that we read was Mobius. He did his own lettering. Talked a lot about that.
Lettering reminds me of Mobius for whatever reason. Maybe it's just because it's thin and...
Oh, man, I looked up the letterer and then I lost it. It's not Simonson.
No, I have it. It is John Workman Jr.
Yeah, who John Workman... put in some work, man.
Yeah.
I actually really, like, it's not often that I notice the lettering. Lettering in this book is really good.
Yeah. It's unique and it's clean and clear and I enjoyed it. And
but stylized, it looks like it suits the setting and the narrative that's going on.
Yeah. I really, like, there are so many things about this. Odin was kind of a jerk as well as a nice father at the same time. It's like, well, you beat Thor. Only one person gets the hammer. Go fight to the death. And then, like, later he's like, no, you needed to learn to lose, son. It's okay. And
that's
like,
the way mythology works, though, isn't it?
But I, really liked Beta Ray Bill, which I never expected to do. But, you know, getting his whole backstory and why he is the way that he is. And, you know, seeing the Scuttlebutt, such a cool looking ship.
I also totally did not know or remember that this is the story where they took away Thor's Donald Blake persona, essentially.
Yeah, he gets a secret identity later in this run that's actually really funny, and I don't know that I want to spoil it because I want to talk about it at length when we get to it.
Cool.
Let's do. I also did appreciate that apart from her, I just want to be Thor's bae. Like, Sif holds up her own a lot in here. Like, she is not rescued, and I really appreciate that. I also like that she wears shorts.
I was just going to say, I was like, the short shorts was a bit of a thing, but drawn
it's,
well.
It's better than what a lot of female superheroes wear, which would just be, you know, the one-piece swimsuit thing.
Yeah.
The fact that she actually has pant legs, kind of nice.
That's true.
Yeah, kind of like we'll find out in our next book that we talk about.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this book?
I just, like, I love all the poses and that, like, you know, they... Just the shots that he sets up are just great. It's just, I don't know, you can just tell, like, this guy knows exactly what he's doing. And it's not just, you know, well, this is how the standard book would go. And, like, we get a lot of different characters. We get a lot of different locations all mixed in. He's able to make something as ridiculous as Beta Ray Bill. And like I said, the, what are the names of Thor's goats? You know, he makes
tooth
Volstagg
tooth grinder.
Yeah, tooth grinder. He makes them look like amazing. Where it's like, yes, this is rock and roll somehow. It's just crazy.
You know, okay, maybe talking about Simonson and how singular he is, I'm actually thinking that there might be a bit of Alex Toth in his artwork as well, which is difficult for me to say because the only reason I know about Alex Toth is because I follow other comic artists on Twitter who all talk about Toth, but I don't really, like, have a good sense of his style. But just doing a quick Google image search for Alex Toth, I can kind of see some of, like, that same sort of style, maybe in the composition work that Simonson has.
And who inspired which one? Like, is it...
I'm pretty sure Toth predates Simonson.
Really? Okay.
Because Simonson's still around, and Toth, I don't believe, is.
So I'm just gonna.
Regardless,
I'm gonna get this Volstagg just framed and hang it up on the wall.
I just want to know why they couldn't make the Corbinites look a little less derpy.
Yeah,
like it really does take some wind out of the reveal at the end. Like when he just has his little face,
and he's like, "Yay!" And it's like, "Good for you." You know,
you kind of looked better as a horse.
Yeah. You can go hang out with Gumby. That's what he looks like.
He looks so much better. Like, get back in my iPhone, you emoji.
The Emoji Movie, starring Beta Ray Thor.
Oh, I would watch the crap out of
that. That is pretty cool, though, seeing Origin of Stormbreaker in the comics. And, you know, it's good on its own. And you know, the one in the movie can be its own thing, too. And it's... You know, inspired by, but just different enough from where, you know, both can be good and not, you know, mess up the others. And doesn't bother me knowing, like, yeah, the weapons. Because, Steven, you mentioned it before, like, yeah, Stormbreaker from the movie, that's actually Beta Ray Bill's hammer, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks the same or similar, at least.
Yeah, close enough, yeah.
And you know what the thing is, though, that I actually really like is, you know, the scene in Ragnarok is really epic, like this whole thing with like baby Thor and like Teen Groot, jeez, all these one syllable names.
Teen Groot's in
you know, where he lifts
Infinity
up
War,
the hammer. And then Thor grabs it, like all the electricity comes out. I thought the reveal of it in here was amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's getting forged, and right while it's forging, he has to, like, pull it out of, like, the fire. And as he's pulling it out, like, it's getting less heavier for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was Hollywood worthy. Like, just mm-hmm. that exact same scene.
Yeah, like, they really know how to make a dramatic moment, like, really land.
But that's, like, the thing I like about Thor comics, or, like, the cosmic stuff in Marvel, is they let themselves be a little bit more theatrical than other parts of the Marvel
universe. Like, particularly, like, Ragnarok and the first Thor. Like, the first Thor, I thought, you know, I think Anthony Hopkins' quote was, they all got into costume and they're standing there looking at each other, and he was like, oh, we don't have to act at all, do we? Because they were just in these, like, you know, crazy huge costumes. And, like, Loki's old helmet, which, I mean, yeah. You know, it's Loki's helmet, but in the movies, you know.
It's Loki's helmet.
Well, I mean, it's just not used as much because you look at it and you're like, really? Like, we're going to have the horns and everything, but.
Well, that's actually, like, a minor nitpick. It's super minor, because I don't know that Simonson really had any say in this. But, like, Loki in this run
mm-hmm.
doesn't have the big horned helmet. I just don't think that was
some, his costume. Hold on. I was just on a page where he did have it. Oh, this is a flashback. That? Flashback when Volstagg is talking about Baldur.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just flashback. We were thinking yep. the same page.
Yep.
You know, while he's sitting on a person.
That's so great. So great.
Yeah. I really look forward to getting to more Simonson Thor in the future. Especially, like, honestly, the stuff with Baldur turns out to be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it kind of drags right here, but gets really good later on. I don't know. I like this run. I like Simonson. This is the book. This and Thor Mighty Avenger are the books that convinced me that Thor as a comic book character was actually worth paying attention to, because I was not impressed with him from other things that I read. It's good stuff. Even if I think this story itself is a little lackluster, it inspires a lot of good things to come.
Would you say that this is a pretty, this is kind of a gate to Baldur? Baldur's Gate, you could say?
I was like, here we go. Aldo's going somewhere with this.
Crack-a-lack-a-deck-a.
I'm so mad right now. I'm so angry at you.
Also, I love that's like the onomatopoeia for when they bro fist their hammers. Brakalakataka.
Now I
I think that's the letterer, and it's great.
It's beautiful. It's just it's not the words I would have chosen, but Krakalakatakta, it's pretty good.
Now, I wanted to know, like, the thing that I had read a little bit of Walt Simonson Thor, but, like, only, like, a single issue, you know, not even a whole story arc. Most of the, like, the only, like, nitpick, and it's fine, it works for what it is, but, like, the quasi-Shakespearean dialogue always kind of bugged me, you know? And I was trying to find, like, some of my favorite, like, by the beard of Odin, you know, like, crazy things that only Ron Burgundy can really say, you know, like, great Odin's raven, you know, weird things like that. I'm trying to find the best one in here, and I just can't find it.
Oh, I like the part, since you're talking about this, there's a part in, like, the first issue when Nick Fury picks him up, and he starts, and he turns into Thor.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh man, this dude, like, I think it's like his my chief would love talking to you for your vocabulary or something like that. I like that they kind of called it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. He says, yeah.
That's not very
I'm already past that part, yeah.
I don't know. For me personally, I actually really like the kind of over-the-top dialogue. Because to me, it really casts this as something different than a lot of the other superhero comics you read. Because this is really more Lord point. Of the Rings than it is Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that extra sort of mythic scale makes this something special in a way that, like, honestly, I think it's difficult to translate to screen. As much as the Thor movies are, you know, successful and, like, wild achievements when you consider what they were adapting to screen at the time, mm-hmm. to me, the watermark for what the Thor Marvel Cinematic movies should be is basically the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings films. And as good as the Thor movies have the potential to be, they're not there. I have to say have the potential to be, because I've seen Thor 2 and I hate it.
Yeah, that is also a weak point. Thor 1. Oh, see, Thor 1 I love, and I think it was the best of the Phase 1 movies. I
love
it.
Dear Kenneth Branagh, why Dutch angles?
Why not? Why tilt camera? It has to be weird.
Yeah.
Why tilt camera?
Why not?
Steven, just tilt your TV.
Yeah.
It gives me a crick in the neck.
Hey, wine. It's like Ocean's 12 when they do a plane taking off and it's all like horizontal and crazy. Ocean's 12 is a good movie and a bad sequel. And with one part that's just horrible, horrifying. Spoiler alert, Julia Roberts plays herself and it's the dumbest thing ever. Makes me so mad every
that's
time.
That's right, I forgot about
that. I have no complaints about Bruce Willis being in the scene. I do have complaints about Julia Roberts playing herself. It's just so dumb. But the movie as a whole still works for me. Because, I mean, I'm already on the hook. I'm an Ocean's fan, so. But that's neither here nor there. Thor 1 was all right, Steven.
Yeah. Well, I think we've exhausted our Beta Ray Bill, the Mighty Thor discussion. Are we ready to move on to Nova?
Wait, hold on. Aldo, I think there's one more thing you want to say.
Scuttlebutt.
There you go. I was like, I hope he picks up on it. Here it comes. Did not disappoint. So I think I might have suggested Nova first. I don't know. This is one of those where I was like, hey, we haven't read Nova yet, really, and I want to read Nova. When I first, the first comic that I can really remember having is an old, like, I think Spectacular Spider-Man Annual, and it was a crossover with the New Warriors. The New Warriors featured, like, C-list characters, and they still kind of do. And Nova was one of them. Rich Rider was that Nova. This Nova is Sam Alexander, and is written by Jeff Loeb and drawn by Ed McGuinness. And I'll say that I like the art and I like the writer. And I know that Steven's going to have different opinions there, but I thought it was all right.
And Aldo's also going to have different opinions there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Sam is a kid who's, what was he, 15, 16?
16.
16 in middle of Nowheresville, Arizona. And has to kind of take care of his dad, who's kind of, you know, he's a drunk, he's kind of a screw-up, he's unreliable, he's not happy about it. He gets bullied at school because his dad's the janitor and his dad does a bad job, and he, you know, is tired of dealing with him. He's you know, his dad always tells him stories about him being a space hero and all of this, and he thinks that he's just full of it, and he can't believe that his sister still believes the stories, and all of this happening. And then at the end of the first issue, you find out, oh, he was telling the truth, because Sam gets knocked out and Rocket Raccoon and Gamora show up at the hospital from the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then he tries on his dad's old Nova helmet and boom, gets transformed, gets a whole Nova suit, gets Nova powers, and ends up on the moon with the Watcher. And the Watcher shows him, kind of explains who he is with just kind of sending him feelings, visions, that kind of thing. And he sees a whole fleet of Chitauri ships coming towards Earth. He goes to them. He meets an old teammate of his dad's, Titus, who tells him that his father was a traitor, and he doesn't want to believe that. He ends up taking out the fleet, fighting them with the Guardians, who finally catch up to him. And the series ends with him, you know, feeling a little bit differently. His mom is more or less aware of him now being Nova, and we learn that somewhere on a distant planet and chained in doing manual labor, his dad's still alive and was telling the truth the whole time. And so that's pretty much it. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Kind of follows the pattern of teen superhero, what we've seen with Ms. Marvel, what we've seen with Peter Parker. In spite of all of that, I liked it. I liked the writing. I liked the art. It was very, very clean. Kind of the modern style that we expect. Jeff Loeb named him Sam after his son, who died of bone cancer when he was 17. I like Jeff Loeb. Shut up, Steven. And I don't know. I mean, that's kind of everything in a nutshell. What do you guys have to say about Nova?
So let me talk about Jeff Loeb for a minute.
Oh, boy. The Long Halloween is great, and you will shut your face.
Here's the thing about Jeff Loeb. Jeff Loeb is good if you get to him before you get to anybody else who has worked with the character that he's writing about.
I did read Hush before I read a lot of Batman, so maybe that's...
Hush is a really good Batman story if it's the first Batman story that you've read, but once you've read more Batman stories, like, you kind of don't need Hush anymore.
Just treat it like it's a survey course, Steven.
That explains why I don't like Hush.
Like, it's true. And I liked Hush when it first came out. And then after a while, it's like, you know what? I actually don't really care for Jim Lee. And I've read a lot of these stories that Hush homages. Like, it's got that sequence where Batman's got his hands wrapped around the Joker's neck, which comes from The Dark Knight Returns. It's got that bit where he is sword fighting Ra's al Ghul in the desert, which comes from the original, I think, Dennis O'Neill run. Like, it's got Batman fighting Superman. It's got all of these things that you've seen Batman do in other stories, and Jeff Loeb just kind of does them again. And that's kind of what I get from this book. It's just, what's interesting is that we haven't seen this Nova before. Mm-hmm. But, like, Loeb is kind of, and I think this is, he's entry level. And that doesn't necessarily make him bad. I don't want to diss on Jeff Loeb, like, he's a terrible writer, because I don't think he is. But he's, oh, there's no way to say this anymore without it sounding like an insult. He's basic.
How dare you? How dare
not
you?
Like that. Steven, not like that.
He wrote Teen Wolf. How dare you?
I actually did not know that about him.
Oh my gosh, he wrote Teen Wolf. His first two movies that he wrote, like, he wanted to become a Hollywood writer, he wrote Teen Wolf and he wrote Commando, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, and both were like stupidly successful. And he was just like, this is normal, right? This is what happens to all writers. And they're like, what? And, you know, other projects that didn't go as well. But, you know, the first season of Heroes was good. And now he does, you know, he's over Marvel Television. And there's some good stuff there, I think. I gave up on S.H.I.E.L.D. a long, long time ago. But the Netflix stuff I love. Well, hold on. Let me rephrase that. I love Daredevil seasons 1, 2, and 3. And the first season of Jessica Jones. And the rest of it can go fly a kite. Cool. So the amount of his involvement in that, sure. If he was involved in the good stuff, hooray. But I like it. And I like his collaborations with Tim Sale a lot. I really like it.
Yeah, I do like Tim Sale as an artist. Yeah. I also like Ed McGuinness.
Yeah.
But I like Ed McGuinness more for the way that he draws, like, faces and characters and poses. Like,
yeah.
I like the sort of clean images. He uses a lot of, like, space. Like, there's, faces are kind of rightly proportioned, but they're also kind of large. I don't really know that I'm putting this into the right terms, but the way that he draws faces makes them very big and very expressive, and I've always really liked that about him. I love the way he draws Superman, and that's not here, of course, but the way that he draws Sam's face, Gamora's face, like, we get there's a lot of real estate there for him to work with, and I really like that.
Yeah, good inking and coloring in these issues as well, and I'm pulling up the artists that did that. Dexter Vines and Marta Garcia.
So I'm typically not a fan of Ed McGuinness. I put off reading this book for a long time because of him. Because I'm not a fan of his art style, and like really my first real interaction with Ed McGuinness, actually Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness both, was on Superman Batman Public Enemies.
Which is pretty mediocre.
It is. It's absolutely okay. I mean, I like the writing in that, actually. I do like Jeff Loeb's writing. I don't like the story. But the interactions are good, which are fine. Which you get a lot of that here. You also get some pretty good interactions here.
Him and the Watcher. And I like that the Watcher is kind of more of a kid. Like, his age is kind of closer to, you know, Sam's. Maybe it's like because he's talking to Sam. That's how Sam
understands I'll give him. You... Like, I don't love the writing in this. I do like the Sam Watcher stuff.
Yeah.
But also, so Jeff Loeb, I'm just not, Ed McGuinness, I'm just not a fan of, like, his big, bulky design. Everybody looks like they're puffed up. Like somebody went up to Superman 5 minutes before set and put, like, an air hose in him and pumped him up for, like, 5 minutes. Like, everybody always looks like that. And so kind of coming in here and seeing him kind of restrained on that because he's drawing children and... I like this Ed McGuinness a lot more than other Ed McGuinness. So I will say
that... I think I'll give you that.
So I think he's won me over a little bit on here, but I'd need to see more of his work. Because a lot of like his big DC, big bulky superhero stuff, I don't like. And I don't like his Hulk, even though he's especially meant to be big and bulky. But it looks soft, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of Ed McGuinness's art, typically. And in here, I think here he does a really good job.
Yeah, I actually think what you say, though, is, like, it's true. The way that he draws and, like, again, sort of the size that he gives to these characters is, ironically, I think, best suited towards drawing children.
Yep.
Which is, like, I do think Ed McGuinness's art suits this story really well. I struggle with it in some places. I don't know that Ed McGuinness is necessarily the best at composition.
Nothing quite as daring, I think, as what we saw with Thor. And like, you know, it's not fair to compare. It's completely different eras, completely different characters, different job to do with each one. But it is very straightforward, which, thinking of this as, if this is your first comic, and maybe it is, as, you know, a good jumping on point with a character that, you know, maybe not everybody's familiar with, but really cool powers, you know, like, if you're going to have powers, like, Nova's not a bad one to have. I don't think that's necessarily
a bad thing. Green Lantern powers, isn't it?
It's pretty much Green Lantern.
Well, he can't, like...
Oh, I don't think he makes constructs.
No, he doesn't make constructs, like the speed and... it's the whole space force type. Mostly thing. It's like... Yeah, I mean, the role is the same, where it's a police force in space. But it's like, it's like Cannonball from the X-Men, you know? He's fast and almost invulnerable while in flight.
Does anybody really want to be Cannonball?
It's not the worst power to have. He's one of the Southern boys, you know? He's got the accent. He's nigh invulnerable when he's blasting, and he says that every single time.
but going back to the compositions in particular, issue 1, page 17, has this weird panel that keeps sticking out to me, where Sam's talking to his mom, and he's bad-mouthing his dad, and his mom kind of gets angry and is like, "You have no idea the sacrifices your father has made. He was a wonderful man." There's this really weird choice where we don't see her face. All we see is her eyes, and the rest of her face is kind of cut off by Sam. But it's not even, like, the back of Sam's head. It's Sam in silhouette.
Oh, and she's just angry eyes at him? Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a weird choice. And then there's that, and then I think it's in issue 2, where we have this page where Sam's getting trained by Rocket and Gamora. Uh-huh. And... oh, it might be issue 3, actually. So we get the montage is kind of going around this giant image of Sam's head. And, yeah, so it's issue 3, page 17. So we've got basically 4 quadrants and Sam's head right in the middle. And it's a decent composition, and I'm actually going to put the blame for this on Loeb. It's a decent composition, but it's kind of thrown off by the fact that there's so many words. Like, to me, Sam, the head, the giant head in the middle, saying "worst day ever" kind of ruins the effect that this panel's going for.
You think without that one speech bubble it would work better?
I do, actually.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah. And again, I think that kind of falls on Loeb, and it's kind of my problem with Loeb, is he, like, is writing this, and I feel bad saying this, because this is, like, the definition of an armchair critic. I don't know that I could write children any better, but this feels like an adult trying to write a child.
A little bit.
Yeah. Whereas some other writers that we've seen are able to do that more effortlessly. Like, I'm thinking of G. Willow Wilson. Like, her teens read as, like, believable teens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me, the part where, like, the art kind of drops the ball is a little bit the choreography. A lot of the times the choreography kind of jumps around a little bit, so stuff doesn't always flow quite so well. And I think where it gets the most egregious is honestly in issue 5, page 4, where Titus is standing in front of Sam holding the helmet. And Sam spots to his left, or like behind him to the left, spots a skateboard, stomps on it. And then the next panel is just that skateboard hitting the helmet out of Titus's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just throws it straight up. And then the next panel after that is just him kind of catching it. And it's just kind of, none of that really connects. Like, the idea connects. Like, mm-hmm. I get what's supposed to be happening.
But it could have flowed better panel to panel.
Well, it's not even that.
It's the fact that, like, he's kicking a skateboard, you know, 2 feet to the left and behind him, and somehow hitting this helmet that's in front of him held up 5 feet in the air.
Yeah, like, the physics of it don't work. Panel 1 on that page, you can see the skateboard behind Sam. So in order for this to work, like, Sam would have to stomp on that skateboard so hard that it flips up and over his shoulder and then curves back up to knock the helmet out of Titus's hand. Mm-hmm. Like, the physics there don't really work. And I don't, again, I think you're probably right that that one kind of falls on McGinnis's layout.
Let's just talk about, I mean, physics don't work. There is a Tiger Man with a gun for a hand in this.
I mean, that was all explained pretty well.
I know, like, that sits pretty well within the fabric of this universe. I don't know that the parabolic flight of the skateboard really... Like, he's not even wearing the Nova helmet. If he was wearing the Nova helmet, I'd hand wave this, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. You use Nova powers. No. Yeah.
Mm. Although, I'm flipping through issue 5 here. There is one thing that I like that is developed right here, but it's not played out yet. It's, like, set up for future payoff. Page 6, Sam's mom sees him with the helmet.
Yeah.
And I've said this before. I think we need more superheroes who's, like, teen superheroes whose parents actually know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Secret identities have kind of run their course as far as I'm concerned. And so the fact that Sam is going to not have one in his home life, at least, makes him more interesting to me.
When everyone could get a picture of you and there's, like, social media and stuff, how are you going to keep a secret identity, like, from your closest, you know, acquaintances or whatever? It's just not possible. Yeah.
Man, you know what would have been really cool? If somebody could have broken that ground and would have been a long-standing hero, had his identity revealed in the midst of a big political debate, and then kind of held on his life after his whole identity's been revealed, and his greatest friends and family are in danger now from his enemies.
You know what, Aldo? I want to push that one step further. What if that same hero made a deal with the devil to put all that back in the box?
You ruined it.
Or at the expense of his marriage.
So, I'll give Lo credit for one other thing in this story. This story reminds me a lot of The Coming of Galactus. Because it ends with Sam Alexander threatening to use the ultimate nullifier. Which is exactly how Reed drove off Galactus. The one difference is, Loeb actually pulls the trigger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was
which
cool.
I don't know... that we've ever seen the ultimate nullifier go off outside of this story. I'm not positive. I don't know how often it pops up. But, the fact that he actually shoots off the ultimate nullifier and now has to kind of live with that, that has potential.
I mean, and I'm curious to see if he does, quote-unquote, live with that.
Kind of question it, yeah. It doesn't look like he's going to from this.
Yeah, because like, there's no panel here going like, man, did I just kill, like, a bunch of people?
Also, it's just what Rocket and Gamora saying, hey, good job, kid. What do they say?
Yeah, we're going to take that. Oh,
from the looks of it, you saved the universe, yeah.
So I want to kind of steer us off course a little bit, just a little bit off of current topic. So remember how I was saying how part of my love-hate relationship with Marvel is how a lot of the designs kind of get grounded, and then the Marvel Universe adopts them, and they kind of just don't look as good, and they kind of ruin it for
you're talking
me
about the Chitauri?
No, I mean, yes.
You're talking about Gamora.
Oh.
Both. I was going to say, I hate that I saw the Chitauri ship, and the first thought in my head was Scarlett Johansson's stupid line of going like, that's not a fun party. God, I hate that line so much.
Well, you know, Joss Whedon is also the same person who gave us, you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
No, he's not. No way.
Yes, he is.
He wrote on X-Men. Yes,
he is. He wrote on X-Men.
Ugh. Well, he also wrote on Toy Story. And
I know.
Are you sure that that was his line?
I'm not positive. I actually think it was, though.
Okay. But also, I am really happy that Gamora has gone from space bikini warrior with a cape to wearing sensible clothing and armor. Like,
with a skull belt buckle, don't forget.
Yeah, like, she's like, the design's cool. Like, it doesn't have to be totally armored, but you don't have to be totally in a bikini. I think Gamora's modern design is super well done. It's a nice middle ground where she can still, like, look like a beautiful woman, but also she doesn't look like she's constantly modeling for Maxim.
Hmm.
Like, it's cool. And I saw, and when she appears in here on page 34, this is also, granted, I think this is 1 or 2 years before the movie came out. So Gamora and Rocket were still fairly, like, unknown to the mainstream audience. I'm assuming most readers who were interested in Nova were probably aware of them. But this is before either of them would get redesigned to fit more to what the movie looks like. So Rocket still has more of like a rounded nose. Or what's the front part of the mouth called of an anime?
Snout.
That's what it is.
Yeah. This does predate the movie.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Because the Chitauri aren't from the movie. They're from the Ultimate Universe.
No. These Chitauri are based on the movie.
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about? Avengers.
You're talking about this.
This came out after Avengers, but before Guardians.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wait, isn't that? Oh, yeah. This is 2013. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as soon as I saw those Chitauri, I kind of rolled my eyes. But also, I was like, because this feels. I mean, obviously, it's a new comic. It's 2013. But there was a moment in my brain where I was like, if this came out after Avengers, why is Gamora still wearing her? Like bikini outfit, and that's kind of why I did the research. I was like, "Oh, this is before Guardians, the film." Interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and I don't know. I thought it was a little funny because I'll admit, you know, I like cheesecake as much as any other, you know, red blooded American man out there. And honestly, the ending like of the first issue on page 24, where she's like in her outfit and raccoons on top of the bed and stuff like that. I was just sitting there going like, you know, what 16-year-old boy doesn't want to wake up to a talking raccoon and a sexy space warrior?
I don't think you watched enough like original series of Star Trek to know how, you know, meetings with green ladies usually end. So he was freaked out and he ran.
There's a terrible line from Tony Stark. I don't remember what it's from. But it's Tony Stark, and I think he's laying with Black Widow, and it turns out to be a Skrull. And the Skrull is like, "Aren't you freaked out?" And he's like, "Green ladies, if they're good enough for Captain Kirk, they're good enough for me." It's a really scummy line.
But there is a later in the because the Guardians of the Galaxy, like, the, you know, they kind of run parallel to this, or like the one new iteration of it, or at least. But yeah, Tony Stark joins the Guardians for a bit, and he hooks up with Gamora, and like, there's a couple of panels of him just laying on his back in bed, just like, she's like, "Well, I'm gonna go. I'll see you later." Like, what was that? And he's just like, "Ow!" Just like,
yes.
I'm so mad at this Gamora costume.
It is pretty ridiculous.
Like, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but there are certain costumes that are designed just, like, to let you know that it is physically impossible for the woman to be wearing underwear under the costume.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is. And that's, I think, my new rule. If your costume doesn't allow you to wear underwear, it's a bad costume. That's my new rule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what the funny thing is, though? At the end of issue 5, or not in the end of it, what page am I? Like, 16... She's wearing like a space armor that looks a lot like what she would kind of go on to wear for a little while later on, more consistently.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, it's got weird booby cleavage things built into it, which
we'll never get rid of that, unfortunately.
They changed. Yeah, they had to change the color of the armor just, you know, like, the boobs are located here in case you're, you know, in your spaceship and couldn't see.
Maybe this is why NASA isn't going to have any female astronauts, is because they don't have boobs designed on the spacesuits.
Oh, jeez.
Which, guys?
Wait, they're not going to?
Yeah, because they don't have spacesuits for women or something like that.
But there have been female astronauts at NASA.
I don't know what's going on.
Is this a new thing?
Relatively. But, like, I was on my honeymoon, so I was not paying attention.
Everything's probably a mess. Everything's a mess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about comics.
Any other thoughts on Nova?
I still like it. I like in the next, I think it might be issue 6 where he meets Superior Spider-Man and he's like trying to learn the ropes. Yeah, the Superior Nova, that's the 7th issue, sorry. He goes to New York. He's trying to kind of get some, like, he's trying to figure out how to be a hero, and he's like, "Heroes are in New York, I'm going to go there." And he runs into, you know, Doc Ock as Spider-Man, which, if you haven't read Superior Spider-Man, it's great. I really like it.
So I was gonna say, I'm a little surprised you actually didn't jump. I'm a little surprised because you typically do this, and you didn't really go a lot into where the Marvel universe was at this point in time, because they make a couple references to it. Because leading up to this had been two events called like the War of Kings and the Thanos Imperative, in which during the Thanos Imperative, Richard Rider and all the other Novas died or disappeared.
Oh yeah, by the way, it's a big deal that Sam is the new Nova because there aren't any others. And he kind of...
Does that mean Sam Alexander is the Marvel Universe equivalent of Kyle Rayner?
Yeah, essentially.
Oh crap, does that mean I have to have to like this kid?
Is that your favorite Green Lantern?
No, like Nova is meant to be like a Green Lantern parallel. Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're called the Nova Corps.
Yeah. Well, there's also there is in later issues, he finds more helmets of the other Novas. Yeah. And it's kind of like Highlander. Like, he learns more about being a Nova. His powers get, you know, better, and he gets better at him the more, you know, other Novas he finds. Yeah.
That's so also established in another comic. I haven't read much Nova, but I've read Annihilation, and that comes up in Annihilation too.
Yeah, so there's a couple things that happen because of Sam Alexander. Part of this is he also finds Richard Rider, and Richard Rider and Sam Alexander then go to start rebuilding the Nova Corps after this. And I think an interesting bit of lore that I never knew, and I don't know if it was created for this or for another, or if it was previously established, but I didn't realize that the color of the helmet also defined what sort of Nova Corps you were in.
Oh.
Because they talk a lot about being black helmets.
Yeah.
And when you look at Richard Rider, he's a golden helmet.
Nova. And Sam is red.
No, he's black.
Oh, he's black. Apparently. It's not the it's not the highlight. It's not the like the brow and the...
No, they all have that red.
It's the actual
They all have the red star.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that was kind of an interesting bit of lore that like the Golden Novas are kind of the main police unit, and these guys are like kind of black ops or SWAT type things.
Mm.
That's what I'm expecting. I mean, it'd be cool if there was a Nova movie and they kind of pick it up from, well, Thanos wrecked Xandar and we had to start rebuilding, and so we're going to start with, and then they can, you know, pick one of, you know, Rich Rider or Sam Alexander, whatever.
With the exception of like the little, like Bugnet building ships, I actually really like the designs that they had for the costumes for the Nova Corps.
Yeah.
Like those costumes I thought looked really good.
You mean in Guardians or?
Yeah.
I did not like Glenn Close in that movie at all. She was just phoning it in. It just was like, why are you even here? Like, it could have been an up and coming actress or a lesser known character actress who could have added something to that more than just like, I'm Glenn Close and I have crazy hair. I'm in a comic book movie.
I mean, it's just you had John C. Reilly. Did you really need another? But
John C. Reilly like actually acted in that movie. He added that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
is you had him. Did you really need another celebrity?
I didn't need another celebrity. I needed someone who could act in that role, or that role could have just not been a thing. All of her lines could have just been like voiceover, like, says like, we examined your DNA and like you're half Earth and you're half Terran or whatever, and your father, well, it's something quite remarkable. Well, see ya, and they leave. Like, seriously, right after that, it's like, see you later, and that like that's where they leave it. And so I'm amazed that like it picked up. I don't know. Guardians 2 was great, so it was okay, but it ended dumbly, and I don't care for her in that movie.
Yeah, but I would absolutely love just a 2-hour long episode of Cops with a Nova Force.
Yeah, yeah. Who are the rednecks of the galaxy? Who are like the trailer park trash that are gonna get in trouble? Like,
oh, what is Yondu from?
Yeah.
You know,
that could do.
He's got the thing already.
Yeah.
Get Norman Reedus as one of those guys.
Oh, jeez.
pay me, Marvel. I just wrote your next movie.
Yeah, make him blue.
Yondu is Norman Reedus.
No,
he's older.
Norman Reedus is a different actor. No. They're both on Walking Dead. Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I'm so confused right now.
Michael Rooker.
You're right. You're right.
It's just they're on the same show, so.
Come on, my dude.
I am literally just now realizing that the person that I thought was Norman Reedus, or that I thought was Michael Rooker, is Norman Reedus. What does Michael Rooker look like?
He looks like Yondu, man. I've never seen
The Walking Dead, guys.
Looks like Yondu, but not blue.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Have you seen Mallrats? He's the principal, or not the principal. He's like the... He's the bad guy in Mallrats.
I mean, just look up Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
I literally just did.
He looks like a modern version of the principal from Back to the Future. Bald, scary white dude.
He kind of looks like, like a slightly older Woody Harrelson.
Yeah. I really like Michael Rooker.
Now I want Woody Harrelson in a Marvel movie.
He was in a Star Wars movie. I was like, he was just in... Oh, wait. That's the other side of the looking
glass. Not yet. They'll get him soon enough.
Get him.
Yeah.
He'll do it if they ask him.
It's a matter of time.
Who would he be, though?
Who do we want Woody Harrelson to play, though?
It'd have to be somebody special. It probably would be somebody from the Guardians, because they friggin' got Sylvester Stallone and Ving Rhames. Think about that Guardians team. That, like, they're going to be the, Ravagers.
Expendables in space.
Yeah. And Miley Cyrus as the C-3PO. Like,
I don't weird mind bot. That.
If it's just a voice, it's not a big deal, but it's just...
I don't mind Miley Cyrus when she's not doing a concert.
So what you're saying is you like the non-musical parts of Hannah Montana.
Yes.
Okay. On that note, are we ready to rank?
This is going
to
be tough.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's been a little while since we've...
been a while.
Done any ranking? Oh my gosh, how many times is Nickelback going to come up?
That's Stained. Is that Nickelback? That is Stained, sir.
That's Stained.
It is slightly more acceptable, though just as overplayed.
All right. So number one on our list currently is Ms. Marvel, No Normal by G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona. Number 50 on our list is One More Day, which we alluded to earlier.
May it stay there forever.
And we recapped as well, so garbage. I don't think we need to get more into that. Let's start by ranking... The first part of the Walt Simonson run on Thor, Beta Ray Bill. Where do we want to put this?
I want to put it, like, above Search for Eternity. Search for Eternity!
Thank you, Aldo. That's how it's done.
But I don't know where above it.
Yeah, like, it's comparable to the Search for Eternity in the sense that it's a really good art showcase, but it's better in terms of plot. And I think it goes a fair bit above that, frankly, because even, like, the weakest part of Simonson's Thor... Well, actually, I don't think this is the weakest part. But even, like, this unfocused part of Simonson Thor is pretty good.
I almost want to put it around Squirrel Power.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it goes, like... And this is funny. I think it goes above Squirrel Power... But I'm also not sure that it goes above Wolverine, which is two slots below that.
That's true.
Oh, but I don't think Wolverine is firing nearly as good as... It's not firing on nearly as many cylinders.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is probably the right neighborhood, though. John, what are you thinking specifically?
Yeah, the more I look at what's above there, like Coming of Galactus, you know, Last Hand, you know, Death of Elektra, Infinity Gauntlet, it's like, okay, those are going to stay there, but... Yeah, it's better than Galaxy's Best Detective at 20, and I think Squirrel Girl, it's probably... It's just so fun, Squirrel Power. It's just so fun.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a nice, neat little story. But this, due to its weight and just how dang good, the art is on it, I would agree it's above Squirrel Power. And I would put it above Neverending Struggle. I know you guys really like that, but it's just a nice story, but nothing particularly, groundbreaking, epic about it. I think it's, very good to have that story in our times, but as far as, like, looking at all the Marvel history or whatever, I would put this one above it.
Genuinely, I don't have an issue with that.
I actually kind of do, but I don't know that I have enough of an issue to really argue about it. Like, I think The Neverending Struggle is interesting in that it's such a novel approach to such a heavy topic.
Yeah.
And I really, really like the way that it presents, hey, this is a serious problem, and this is something that even a superhero can't solve, And that's not the way they present it out and out, but they do... show that with Deadpool saying, hey, you need help, and I'm not the guy to help you. Like, I think that's an interesting lesson to be taught in a nominally superhero book. But at the same time, Simonson is Simonson, and he's real good. So I think I'm okay with it going above that.
Okay. I think we're in agreement then.
Yeah.
All right, so that puts Beta Ray Bill... I think we should just call it Beta Ray Bill. I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we read this story is to,
Yeah, I don't think this arc has a name.
Yeah.
But I think that puts it at number 15, above The Neverending Struggle and below In Pursuit of Flight. Yeah. Which, yeah, I think that's right. I think In Pursuit of Flight holds together better and does a lot of, like, the same sort of thing, but holds together as a cohesive story better than this does. Yeah, I think that's the right decision. All right. And now, let's go with this Nova arc.
I think it could go as high as 21, but then I just see that Thor's battle world is 23, and I really liked that, and kind of on Thor, Rogue and Gambit at 24, so I would put it at 24, somewhere between 21 and 24. I would say 24 would be okay.
I want to put it at 21, because I think it's really good. I think it's, to me, honestly, I think it's as good as, like, as Squirrel Power or Finely Woven Thread, but not, for me at least, not better than Spider-Man. Yeah. So
I want to put this at 34.
Whoa! Steven, calm down.
That's where Sweet Christmas is.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit better than that.
Oh.
It's not that bad.
Oh.
It's not that good either.
How do you feel about 25?
Like, I can already tell that I'm going to lose this argument. It's just like, to me, this plot is nothing special. The character could be interesting. This story doesn't really do it for me, even though it starts some interesting threads. This isn't the best showing for Ed McGuinness. I've read a Jeff Loeb book before, so I know how they go.
Hey man, Catwoman Wind in Rome is actually pretty cool. And
okay, I'll admit I haven't read that
one. And if you like The Godfather, you'll like Long Halloween, because the first couple of scenes are like the same. But shut up.
I
love how you compare Jeff Loeb's, like, work. Like you said, you'll like this if you like this other thing that he was probably ripping off when he wrote this.
Oh no, he absolutely was. And it's still in. I'm not saying that that's not a thing. You're absolutely right. But I still like it. Even in spite of that, I still like it. I don't know. That's Long Halloween was one of the first things I picked back up when I was like, it was around like 2008, and I was like, I'm gonna get into comics, and like, you know, I was like, I'm gonna compare different artists, and this guy's different. I'm gonna read this, and then later found out how big of a deal, you know, those Halloween specials they did were.
I do still have a soft spot for the Long Halloween for what that's.
And the follow up was what was. Dark Victory? Yeah, Dark
The Long
Victory.
Halloween 2, this time the plot makes less sense?
No.
Electric
Boogaloo? I'm pretty sure that's what
Dark,
it was called.
It was Dark Victory. It's, you know, introduction of Robin and the fallout of Two-Face, like becoming Two-Face. It's also good.
Boy, I'm looking for all these characters in Marvel Unlimited. I can't find them.
Where are we settling on Nova, then?
Like, I mean, if you guys want to put it around, like, 25, then that's where it goes. Just know that you're doing so, you know, over my wishes, and
oh, it was my
birthday yesterday.
This is a
and how dare you?
Oh, he's playing. Okay, all right.
I don't care. I think this is way better than Riri Williams.
Interesting, because they both have a similar kind of. It's like an existing hero being taken over by a young kid.
Yeah, they're definitely comparable. I think the Riri Williams story is better.
I had a hard time with it, but I also remember saying multiple times the story's not for me.
Yeah.
Also,
well, this story's not for me either.
Well, it's better than Rogue and Gambit, so I'm going to vote 23 or 24 rather as a compromise.
Not Rogue and Gambit. That's not a compromise. That's going the other direction.
Oh, I'm saying Aldo and I are compromising with you.
A little bit. I don't think this is better than Rogue and Gambit.
Okay, Aldo, you have final say, because I want it higher. Steven wants it lower.
Listen, I'm willing to put this about above House of M.
House of
Wait,
M.
hold on.
Hold on.
Oh, wait, no, that's... yeah, okay, I'm fine with that. Sorry, we haven't talked about House of M at all in this discussion to this point, and so I was, like, really thrown off by that.
That was the trick. Ha!
You got me, you rascal.
All right.
So...
Man, too bad we're not a DC Comics podcast, because we're at 52 right now.
Oh, man, 52 would be an event for us.
And you know how much they love the number 52.
They do, because they had one series with 52 issues that was kind of all right, and then they keep trying to recapture that lightning in the bottle, and it doesn't work.
Hey, what are we calling this story?
You know what? I think it's just called Nova.
Yeah.
Like, that's what all the title pages say, and I know that's the title of the series, but they don't have another title to it, so I'm just going to say Nova.
Neat.
All right, that's our number 27 now. So, that's going to wrap up the ranking for this week. For our next episode, we're actually going to do something a little different. We're not going to be reading any comics.
Wow.
That's kind of a surprise.
There's a good chance I'll be reading them, just we won't, you know, report on them.
Right, we're not going to talk about them. Our next, well, we're going to talk about comics, but we're not going to talk about, we're not going to do the book club thing for our next episode, because our next episode is actually our 1 year anniversary of doing this podcast.
Yeah, our 1 year happened. Yeah, well, like, it happens in between, like, our recording and the next episode. Or no, it happens between when this episode comes up and the next time we record.
So right. Off. Yeah, it's weird. But I don't know, when was the last time that you guys did something consistently for a year?
I mean, I ate and breathed.
Yeah.
And panicked.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the closest I've come to actually keeping a New Year's resolution for a whole year. And I started it in April, you know?
But we made it a year, you know? We made it a year.
Next episode that we record is going to be a really spoiler-heavy take on Avengers Endgame. We're all going to have seen it by that point. We're going to spend some time talking about it. But we're also going to talk a little bit more generally about our lives, our history with comics, and some of our favorite memories and experiences reading comics, either growing up or as adults. So it'll be more of a laid-back, get-to-know-your-podcast hosts sort of episode. I'm really actually looking forward to it. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But we'll be back with another book club sort of episode after that. This episode is going to go up on April 22nd, and then we will have our 1 year anniversary episode go up on May 6th.
That's almost Cinco de Mayo. That's my day.
It's almost Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you.
It's Return of the Sith.
Return of the Sith.
Was it Revenge of the Sith?
Six. Make sure you watch Last Jedi and don't complain about it because you're wrong. It is good. And have a taco. But have a, have a street taco. Like yeah, a real nice. Taco.
That's a real yeah. taco. Not a burrito. That's Tex-Mex.
Right. A street taco with cilantro and lime and no,
support
see.
Support local.
Yeah. Find a truck. That's where the tacos come from.
All right. Well, with that taco talk out of the way, I think we're due to wrap up this episode. John, Aldo, thank you so much.
I really wish that I had Thor's parting words to Beta Ray Bill, like, farewell the good noble warrior, or something like that, but I don't.
Krakalakatakala.
Yeah, there you go. It's an old Asgardian blessing. My grandmother used to say it to us as we left her home. Krakalakalaka, my chillins.
I used to like making up, like, crazy old-time scriptural speak when I did improv comedy, so let me take a crack at this.
Oh, okay.
Gentle listener, fare thee well. Until our next meeting, we prithee remember that thou art upon our list, which meaneth that thou must read the entirety of the folio of the complete works of William Shakespeare before we next convene, that thou mightest also join with us in our robust, florid verbiage.
Remember yeah. or perish.
That's like a dungeon master that tries to.
It's like, settle down, Quentin. We're all just in the basement.